All right, well, with that, thank you both.
Yeah, thank you.
And let's move on to item six, which is the review of the report on the risk diversifying sub-portfolio.
I'm going to join Kat over here. She's going to do the vast majority of the work, but I just want to introduce the topic real quickly. This is our annual risk diversifying sub-portfolio review. We've been doing these for many years here. Typically, we focus on the role of this program within the broader FFB construct. So this is the, call it the insurance basket. It's the insurance basket relative to the public markets growth exposure, but we don't want to pay too much. So we don't want this to bleed money. We do want to have a positive expected return. When we talk about performance relative to expectations, this has been the one where we've been below expectations. So this has been an ongoing challenge. And part of the reason for that is we've tried to find lower cost, long only implementation options that were hedging by their nature. So think bonds or something of that nature, realizing that we became overly reliant on fixed income. So we had that conversation with the board about 2 years ago, started down this path of getting, you know, a broader suite of products into the lineup here, brought trend following in a year and a half ago or so. But I think, you know, we all recognized that this was an ongoing challenge. And about a year plus ago, had a conversation with the investment committee that we thought we needed focused consulting services on broader suite of hedging strategies. And so we included that in the RFP for general consultants. We now have that resource online with Makita. The other thing we did over the past year is we hired two new people, most pertinently Kat Zhang. And Kat has specific hedging expertise. So I think we're now at a point where we have internal resources and experience backed up by dedicated consulting resources and really are set up to take this forward from this point. For this year's presentation, I'm going to ask Kat to give an overview of her analysis. I think importantly, what has worked, what has not worked, what do we need to build a more resilient program going forward. She's going to highlight our plan of attack really for the next 3 years. And this is not something we're going to start in the future. This has already started. Kat has been working with Ryan Lobdell at Makita really since day one of the Makita contract going live to start to flesh out the likely first round of managers that we're going to be introducing here. And I'm going to turn it over to Kat to talk a bit about her background in the hedging space, her analysis, and the game plan. But before I do that, any big picture questions for me before we get into the nitty-gritty details here?
Not seeing any.
All right, this one's exciting for me because there's a game plan and we're pretty jazzed up about this one.
All right, good morning, everybody. It is a real honor to be here today. My name is Kat Zhang, and I figured before we get started, I would give a quick introduction to myself since this is my first time presenting in front of you.
And just before you do that, can you pull that microphone?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's great. That
I just want to have a hearing impairment.
Absolutely. So I joined Sisera earlier this year in July, so about 4 months. Previously, I was a director at Atos Alternatives Management, which is a fund of hedge funds and outsourced OCIO provider. There, I was focused on external manager selection across a wide variety of different hedge fund strategies. Prior to Atos, I was at Wells Capital Management on their Montgomery fixed income team, where I was focused on corporate credit as well as structured credit research. And I'm really happy to be here to talk about the risk diversifying sub-portfolio and what our plans are for the next several years. So today, for our agenda, on slide two, here we go. We'll start by setting the stage. So we'll review the RDP mandate and how success of the program is measured. I'll give a quick refresher on the current portfolio, the existing allocations today, and give an analysis of what historical performance has looked like. I'll then walk through some areas that we have identified where we think the portfolio can be improved upon that would help the RDP better achieve its stated goals. And then lastly, I will talk through next steps, so what our game plan is for the next several years and how we are going to get there. So just to set the stage for today's discussion, slide three is going over the stated objectives for the risk diversifying portfolio as defined by the IPS. So the first objective is to offset investment risk of the growth portfolio. We'll go through what some of those inherent risks are in the later slides and what RDP is meant to do in relation to those risks. The second objective is to provide a positive real return for the overall portfolio, so therefore making the RDP not just a risk hedging portfolio, but hopefully one that grows over time as well. And then the third objective is to maintain a strong liquidity profile. So while the portfolio has a strong liquidity buffer already, primarily with the liquidity sub-portfolio, one of the goals of RDP is to be able to be a source of liquidity during extreme market dislocations and have the capacity to serve as a funding source as needed. So for example, if equity markets are down 25%, we want to be able to pull capital from RDP in order to buy some of that and take advantage of some of those opportunities there. So there are a number of ways to measure a successful RDP program. The top left on slide 4 is historically how we have thought about the program, where we are looking to have a portfolio that showcases no to low correlation to the growth portfolio. This, of course, means that during the months where the growth portfolio is down, we would like the RDP portfolio to either be flat or up, and of course, the opposite would be true there as well. We would like to take it a step further and consider what correlation might look like to the publicly traded parts of the growth portfolio, so extracting out private equity, private credit, and real estate investments that tend to be more illiquid. Part of the success is also measured, of course, by the portfolio's ability to generate positive real returns and having strong liquidity such that it can come in use as needed. We'll also like to put in a few more guidelines in place as a way to think about what a successful RDP program means. So those are the other three pictures on this slide. So the top right is low beta to the growth portfolio. You can, of course, think of beta as how much the RDP portfolio is sensitive to the growth portfolio moves, so both in direction and magnitude. So a beta of 1 would mean that the RDP moves completely in line with the growth portfolio, which is, of course, not what we want. Ideally, we want that beta to be negative, but at the very least, as close to 0 as possible. So said another way, we want the RDP performance to not be sensitive to movements in the growth portfolio. And then the other two charts are now showing, considering what a drawdown profile of the growth portfolio looks like. We'll show what those drawdown graphs look like in later slides, but essentially think of this as a visual representation of how bad negative performance can look, both in terms of magnitude and in terms of duration. So how long it then takes performance to recover. In the ideal RDP, the drawdown graph for RDP would be one that offsets the drawdown graph for growth, so that the down months occur during different times. And 2, we would want the severity and the duration of the drawdowns for RDP to be smaller and shorter than those experienced by the growth portfolio. Okay, so now that we've refreshed on the mandates and we've talked through high level how success would be measured, we can do a quick overview of where we currently stand. So the next two slides, slide 5 and 6, are what we show in our quarterly presentations. This is data as of 9:30, so of course things have moved around since. But just glancing through the line items, there are a few areas that can be improved upon, especially when viewed in context with what we covered earlier. Across the underlying investments, the correlation to the growth portfolio generally remains higher than desired. I think, however, what is important to note here, though, is that the goal is not for the RDP to have every single underlying investment accomplish all of the goals, but that at the aggregate level, the portfolio should. So while we do have some line items right now that track below expectations, the goal is to build out a portfolio that moves the needle closer to what an optimal RDP would do, which may very well continue to include these investments just as part of a more diversified portfolio.
Question for you, just press pause. So there's a lot of yellow on this. I think the yellow predominates the green, if I'm not wrong. So the question I have is, in your analysis of this, coming into it, fresh set of eyes, expertise, are the shortcomings more about managers or about strategies?
I think it's a little bit more about strategies, and we'll cover some of this in later slides as well. As Tim mentioned, a lot of these managers have been more focused on fixed income, which in more recent past has been more of a diversifier against global equity risk. But I'll show in a later slide that that may not be always reliable. And so part of it is strategy and what kind of toolbox that they're playing with, if you will.
Okay.
Can I ask you a question? The FLCIO, 9-year return, -1%. But that's an income-generating investment. So is the negative return reflective on value that's on paper versus the actual cash that we got from the investment? Or what's that -1%?
This should be total returns.
These are total returns there. Yeah.
Inclusive of the cash.
Yeah. And I'm just going to fast forward really quickly here. The fixed income portfolio had been a good diversifier and an okay return generator up until the interest rate hikes in 22. That year, you saw equity markets come down sharply, and you saw fixed income, which the yields were already quite low. Those yields spiked up, so the total return came down. That emphasis on fixed income as the primary diversifier works in a flight to quality type of risk-off scenario. It doesn't have inflation protection. It doesn't have rate protection. So what we're going to talk about here is that over-reliance on fixed income as the primary diversifier, which had worked for a long period of time. You know, that experience there, that shock to the system, which shows up in the 5-year total returns here, is like, okay, we need to broaden this. And that's when we started down this path towards trend following. And now Kat's going to talk about what we're going to do to expand that roster.
Yeah. Before we move on, we were just talking about AFL-CIO, and I'll give a little bit more information into each of these line items as well as a setup for the next few slides. So AFL-CIO has tended to have lower correlation in beta versus the growth portfolio, especially if you are looking at the last 10 to 15 years. But since then, both measures have ticked up. They are primarily invested in agency MBS and Ginnie Mae securities. And there's a few things that would have made correlation low to the growth portfolio in the past. One, returns on MBS tend to be driven by interest rate volatility, prepayment risk, and the yield that investors get. And then with the Fed having undergone QE for much of the 2010s, that also provided consistent demand for MBS securities as well, regardless of what was happening in broader equity markets. BHDG is the trend follower that we added about a year and a half ago. They run with medium-term signals. Performance this year has been a bit more muted, as has been the case for many other trend followers, and that's particularly in the first half of this year. However, trend strategies in general are designed to do really well when there is a sustained market move, so that goes for both upwards trending as well as downwards trending, and does so across a diversified set of asset classes. This tends to make these strategies good diversifiers in a portfolio over the long term, and tend to have low correlation over the long term as well. And then SIT-LCAR mainly invests in a combination of muni bonds and closed-end funds. The team tends to play events related to closed-end fund discounts or premiums to NAV, which may occur distinct from what is happening in broader equity markets. And historically, that strategy has exhibited, I would say, mid-correlation to broader equity markets. And muni bonds are still subject to interest rate risk, as seen with broader fixed income securities. And then Dimensional is our latest investment, and that is our exposure to U.S. TIPS and treasuries. So, of course, the wrinkle in the portfolio is that markets are always changing. Most relevant for RDP is that the historical correlations, as Tim mentioned, of major asset classes don't quite look the same today as it has in recent history. So what may have worked for the RDP in the past does not necessarily translate into a portfolio that will continue to work in today's environment or even tomorrow's environment as well. So what Tim was mentioning, we have a visual representation of. So one way to look at this is the rolling correlation between equities and bonds. So that's the chart on slide 7 on the left. These are all looking at 36-month rolling numbers, and that just helps smooth out some of the noise. Whereas for almost a decade, we would look at the, let's say, left chart on the left and say, well, bonds would be a good diversifier for equities because the correlation between the two asset classes is close to zero. That, of course, has changed since the Fed started raising rates in 2022. And we see a similar trend reflected in the beta graph as well. Correlations between a globally diversified index of equities, such as MSCI ACWI, and an index of U.S. bonds with interest rate and credit risk, such as the Bloomberg Aggregate Index, broke down in 2022. Equities fell on inflation concerns, the Fed raising rates, geopolitical concerns like Russia-Ukraine, and bonds fell as yields rose quickly during the year and spreads widened out. However, it is important to note that this is not the only time in history that equities and bonds have experienced negative returns in a calendar year. This is somewhat more rare, and it is decently common that equities and bonds may both have positive returns in a year, and that would also suggest that correlations are not always zero or negative between the two asset classes. Of course, the obvious question is, moving back. Of course, the obvious question is now that if we are in an environment where the U.S., where rates seem to be coming down, does that then mean that correlations will start to work in our favor again? Of course, if correlations start to fall back towards zero or go negative, that would be beneficial for our current portfolio. But the goal of this portfolio is to build a resilient portfolio, one with a robust toolbox that can work agnostic of these different market environments. So why does all this matter? So if we go to the next slide, slide 8, I mentioned drawdown graphs in an earlier comment. This is what the drawdown graphs look like for broader equities and credit. The dark gray line here is MSCI ACWI, which is the Diversified Global Equities Index, and the orange line here is the Bloomberg U.S. Aggregate Index. We see that from 2011 to around 2022, the two lines don't really have any relationship with each other. But now that's not really the case anymore. So one of the ways to measure success of RDP is to consider what the drawdown graphs might look like. So what we want is for this chart to look similar to the 2011 to 2022 time period, not what it looks like from 2022 to today. So, of course, this is also high level, bigger picture, broader markets. We, of course, care about the Cicera portfolio. So if we continue with the drawdown visuals, let's look at the growth portfolio first. So remember, this includes our long-only equities, our private equities, private credit, and real estate. The gray line here is MSCI ACWI again, and the blue line here is the growth portfolio. We see that versus MSCI ACWI, the two lines move quite in line with each other, and that makes sense, given we have a lot of broader equity risk in the portfolio. So of course, we would expect there to be similar movements between the two lines, but not 100% on top of each other, because there are other investments in the growth portfolio that provide a diversified return stream. But what if we take out the illiquid stuff from the growth portfolio? So what happens if we only look at the liquid investments? This is slide 10. So again here, the gray line is MSCI ACWI, and the pink-purple line is the growth portfolio, but focusing on the public liquid investments. Well, here, the lines are almost consistently on top of each other. There's obviously some deviations, so if you look in 2012 or 2023, and that's because of the underlying investments that make up the growth portfolio. But for the most part, when there is a drawdown in the broader equity markets, we basically expect a drawdown in the growth portfolio publics, and often to the same magnitude and length of drawdown as for ACWI. So what does this tell us? This tells us that we have quite a bit of broader equity risk in our portfolio. Whether or not this is the level of risk we want to take is, of course, up for debate. But what we're here to talk about is how do we mitigate some of that risk with our RDP portfolio. So what happens then if we graph RDP against the liquid portion of the growth portfolio? Well, we get the next chart on slide 11. So here, the pink and purple line is, again, the public portion of the growth portfolio, and the green is the RDP. So what we like to see is that there is relative randomness between the two lines. There's some co-movement together, so back in 2015, 2016, 2020, and 2022, but it's decently diversified, and that's good. But there's definitely more that can be done. The next slide, slide 12, is just another way to slice and dice the data. So this is looking at some recent peak-to-trough drawdowns for the growth portfolio publics and comparing that to what RDP did. So for example, from September 2011 to September 2022, the growth portfolio publics experienced a drawdown of almost 26%. During that same time period, the RDP lost 5%. For the most part, during some of the more recent drawdowns of the growth publics, we see a corresponding drawdown for RDP. While we generally see a big delta between the growth drawdowns and RDP performance, our goal is to make that delta even wider. So of course, during sharp equity market drawdowns, we would like to monetize from an RDP, and we could monetize from an RDP that's down 5%, but ideally we'll like to avoid monetizing losses where possible. So ideally, we would want the RDP numbers here to be positive when there are drawdowns, like was the case during the drawdown in 2011, but at the very least, we want those red numbers to be closer to zero for RDP. The next slide, slide 13, shows again MSCI ACWI in gray, the growth sub-portfolio in blue, and the RDP in that pink-purple color. This is looking at monthly data from 2012 to September 2025, and this is ranked by the worst down months of MSCI ACWI over that time period, and then what growth portfolio and what RDP did performance-wise in those particular months. You'll see for the most part, the purple lines are varied, but there is quite a bit of purple lines that fall below the x-axis and are decently sizable in the same direction as the gray and the blue. There are, of course, a few exceptions, but what we'll ideally like to see is more positive purple lines, and particularly more positive purple lines on the left side of the graph. So in other words, we want that RDP portfolio to zig when the growth portfolio is zagging. So what does that look like and how do we get there? Well, if we bring back the drawdown graph on slide 14, here again, the purple is the growth portfolio publics, the green is our RDP. I've added some red boxes and arrows, and those show what ideally we would want that green line to show up as. We want that green line and pink line to be experiencing drawdowns in offsetting time periods, and we want the severity of the drawdowns for RDP to be smaller, so closer to the y-axis and shorter in duration, so spending less overall time below zero. So before we go on, just wanted to pause very briefly for any questions.
I was afraid there's a test on this.
So what I would say is I think it's winter. We're on Mount Everest at base camp, and you're the Sherpa. We have to figure out a way to get through this and to get to, you know, to where we're going in terms of the go forward. It's a lot of material. It's interesting, actually, the correlations or lack thereof. But what I would say is, I think it would be most helpful for us to know sort of the higher level strategic thought. So how we're going to get from here to there. Yep. I think that would be very interesting.
Yep.
And pretty telling, actually.
And that is a perfect segue. So thank you for that.
Well, hold the perfect segue.
Sorry, I tried.
I don't want to steal your thunder. The AFL-CIO, I know a way slight factor. I'm hopeful that the investment committee and the team will be looking at that more carefully. Because to me, that's a dashboard page, the kind of dashboard page that I think has a blinking red light on it. And if you look at a five-year average return of -1%, it's not the future. So you don't have to necessarily answer it all at this time, but I'm hoping that it gets additional attention on that, not just from a strategy standpoint, but also a manager standpoint, because it doesn't necessarily have to be one or the other. It could be both. And that's not a good factor for return.
No, it's not. And that is representative of that core bond space. So the manager is roughly in line with the benchmark, but that benchmark is not the experience we want. And that is part and parcel of the rate rising environment or the rate hiking environment in 22. And now that that's starting to come off, you know, yields are up, returns are better on a go forward basis, but that experience is not what we want to be indicative of the structure going forward. And so if we take a look at 14 here, we don't want that rate environment to be driving the risk diversifying. So therefore, we want that green line get shoved up, moved to the left, and that's the game plan from here forward.
It could be argued that particular bucket has got 5 years of good money.
Certainly, core bonds did, yeah.
Thank you. Now, put on that segue. It was just perfect, and I'm sorry to trip you up there.
Did I mention that we were in the snowstorm as well? Waiting at base camp to be in the snowstorm.
All right. So we are all familiar with the functionally focused portfolio for the whole portfolio. So what if we were to extend that concept and framework to the RDP? So we have three mandates for RDP. We want managers that are risk diversifying. We want managers that provide positive real returns. And we don't want our capital to be locked up for extended periods of time. No one manager, no one strategy is going to accomplish all those mandates at the same time. A manager that generates strong real returns is very likely not going to be risk diversifying in the times that matter. So by taking the FFP concept and applying it to RDP, we can then segment the portfolio into two main goals. Managers that achieve the risk diversifying mandates, managers that achieve the return generating mandates, and overarchingly, managers that provide investor-friendly liquidity. So the numbers 1, 2, and 3 on top of this refer to the three phases for this plan, and we'll go over that in more detail later. So I apologize, there's a lot of writing on this slide, but this at a high level is breaking down what an illustrative game plan looks like. Each of the phases, 1, 2, and 3, are meant to target a particular area identified with the current RDP, an explanation of why that area matters, and then what the plan is in terms of manager build-outs. So the first phase falls under risk diversifying and is meant to directly offset some of the investment risks that are inherent in the growth portfolio. Because current correlation and beta levels are relatively elevated at the moment, that makes the growth portfolio particularly susceptible to broader equity risk, given how much our current growth portfolio tracks to broader equity markets like ACWI. So the first phase focuses on strategies that will address this, looking to add 1 to 3 managers that are better equipped to handle market drawdowns as a first or second responder, as Makita will call them. We have some treasury exposure and other fixed income exposure right now through DFA, AFL-CIO, and SIT, which historically have served as better risk offsetters, but as we saw earlier, that low correlation between equities and bonds that we enjoyed for a while is no longer reliable. So we'll take a look at other strategies, including strategies that play not on the direction of markets, but on the volatility in different asset classes that would be a complement to our existing trend allocation. So while trend tends to do well when there are identified trends in the marketplace, these more volatility-focused types of strategies tend to kick in best when there are periods of market volatility, which tends to occur when there are market downturns. One nuance to tease out here is that this is not pure tail risk hedging strategies, because those strategies, while they do great in periods of stress, also tends to bleed over time if there are no big market events. So many of these volatility-focused strategies utilize other instruments to help generate some incremental returns when there are no big market events happening. Additionally, we'll take another look at trend as well to see if we can improve RDP's profile by supplementing our existing trend manager with another manager that has a different and complementary profile. So either in terms of signal speed or market focus. That would then allow managers to better capture trends in the market across a diversified range of options. So with phase one, we're essentially trying to say, okay, we have an event like March of 2020. Our manager is playing the volatility of markets kick in strongly. And then when that initial move subsides and some sort of trend develops, whether upwards or downwards, we would expect our trend managers to kick in and take advantage. The second phase also falls under risk diversifying, but may also straddle return generating, depending on the strategy. This phase broadens out the goals of phase one, where now instead of looking for direct offsets to growth portfolio specific risks, we broaden it out to strategies that overall tend to offer low correlation to the growth portfolio. This may come in the form of market neutral equities, so not having any directional bets on the market, so definitionally will be low correlation to broader markets. It may also include certain macro-type strategies, which find opportunities across different asset classes and can take advantage of different differences across countries if we're looking at global macro, which especially in today's environment where we are seeing increased divergence in how different nations are conducting monetary policy and bifurcating economies, could be a particularly interesting time for this space. This may also include other multi-strategy managers, but rather than focusing on one asset class like equities, find opportunities across several others, such as credit, commodities, interest rates, FX being common areas. The idea here is to expand the toolbox of RDP, focusing on 3 to 6 strategies that have consistently shown low correlation across market cycles to our growth portfolio. And then the last phase falls under return generating. Since the goal of RDP is not just to offset risk, but to generate positive return as well, the last phase is focused on very opportunistically finding a handful of managers that provide that extra oomph to the portfolio. So this may be more directional equity managers or event-driven strategies, so managers that are playing some sort of corporate event, for example. The focus here is not to undo the work that phase one and two accomplishes, but to opportunistically find a handful of managers that, when added to the whole portfolio, can give a little bit more push to returns. For the build-out, we have already been working with Makita from both an investment due diligence as well as an operational due diligence perspective. And we have had a few conversations already to set the stage and discuss manager ideas, and we'll continue to utilize their expertise moving forward.
So Scott, just to put it in your terminology, phase one gets us from the peak down into the oxygen zone so we can breathe again. Phase two gets us through the ice fall, through the danger zone. Phase three gets us all the way back to base camp.
See what I did there?
If we're going to torture that analogy.
it's super helpful, and I appreciate that you've been engaged with Makita. And that this is like full on go, and appreciate your expertise coming into this, because I think that this has been a tough one, right, for everybody. And so having a strategy and a clear plan is absolutely on point, and I know everybody is feeling good about that.
In terms of timeline, so this is my beautiful Microsoft Paint production. So we've been doing quite a bit of work into phase one already. We've been meeting with many managers in that space, and over the next year, we'll work through formal IDD and ODD processes. In the meantime, we've started building a pipeline of managers for phase two and three as well, with those processes expected to ramp up in the latter part of next year and onwards.
I like these timelines where you just have an arrow. There's no, like,
exactly, yep.
I'm going to start using that. It's good.
The next slide reiterates what we just covered in hopefully a more easy to read table. So right now, the current portfolio is below our expectations in terms of objectives one and two. The phases I outlined just now are meant to hit on the different objectives in different ways. As you can see, no phase is going to address all three objectives at once. But the hope is that by building up the portfolio from the bottom, the goal is that in aggregate, once this portfolio is built out, all three objectives will be met. So in summary, let's go to the strategy heat map slide, which is slide 19. I know there's a lot going on, and the colors did not come out exactly as I wanted, but that's okay. To help orient you here, the yellow is less favorable. There is a slightly light green. That means okay favorable, and the dark green means more favorable. And then there's more specific ranges outlined on the bottom of the slide. So breaks out correlation, beta, annualized return, and expected liquidity. And this is looking at broad indices. Essentially, what we're trying to do with this build out is capture a matrix of behaviors. So we currently have exposures to U.S. Treasuries, segments of the Bloomberg Ag, mainly mortgages, and trend following, so the areas that are bolded. Directionally, if you look at the colors there, they're decent. We see some light and dark greens. But the idea is to expand that list of strategies and build out a portfolio that in aggregate has more green. So looking down the graph, it's pretty clear that there is no strategy that is green in every single column. But some are definitely stronger in some areas than others. Not every strategy shown here either necessarily makes sense for Cicero. So for example, we may not be very interested in distressed credit managers at the moment, since those situations can tend to take quite a bit of time to work out. And there's a certain cyclicality to the opportunities set there as well. We're not just looking at these strategies in isolation, but more importantly, how they integrate into a well-diversified portfolio. So in summary today, we've gone through an overview of the RDP program, what that mandate is for the program, how we measure success, what the current status of the portfolio looks like, and where we think there is room for improvements, and what we plan to do. Markets, as we all know, are always changing, and it is very rare that there is nothing going on that gives us concern. Today, it's concentration in equity markets, it's elevated valuation levels, it's continued geopolitical uncertainties, it's an evolving world order, it's historical correlations between major asset classes moving in ways that we have not experienced in many years. Cicero's portfolio is set up to withstand a lot already. We have our liquidity sub-portfolio that's meant to meet the regular liquidity needs of our pension beneficiaries. And we have the growth sub-portfolio, which is focused on capital appreciation over time so that Cicero can continue to serve its beneficiaries into the future. The RDP program was set up to focus on offsetting some of that volatility experienced in other parts of the portfolio, particularly the growth portfolio, while also providing a stream of diversified real returns. So we're excited to continue this build out, and we very much look forward to providing updates in the future.
All right, thank you, David.
So on here, it looks like there's kind of like three strategies that have some check marks across the board, and that would be trend, macro, and equity market. Neutral. Is that, am I reading that correctly? Is that
right? That would be, yes, you are reading that correctly. So to specify, this is looking at a 60-month, this is looking at five-year analysis. And so over long periods of time, this, what the colors look like in here may change. This is only looking at the last 5 years. But you are correct. Trend following, macro, and equity market neutral seem to have more green columns, and those are areas that we are looking into as well as potential.
More of where your focus would go at this
yes.
time.
So trend
might change.
Exactly. So trend following would be part of our phase one, and macro and equity market neutral would be part of our phase two. I break it out into three phases just to make it a little bit easier to understand, but really it's all kind of a continuum of research that we're conducting.
So this was meant to highlight what the game plan is going to be. So you can imagine that there'll be a lot of work over the upcoming year in terms of due diligence, but we anticipate the manager roster for phase one and two starting to get manifested here in 2026. So this kind of gears you up for when you're seeing managers come across the come across the wire that we're doing a due diligence on folks. We'll categorize them this way and be able to communicate that and hopefully be able to show you the initial implementation over the course of the upcoming year.
All right. Any other or further questions?
I have a question. I was kind of debating internally whether to ask it or not because it's probably a very dumb question. But looking at how hard it is to develop this risk diversifying portfolio and manage it all the time spent, why don't just have a larger liquidity portfolio that pretty much has zero correlation to the growth portfolio and you can use it to capture drawdowns? So what's the point? Because liquidity portfolio pretty much doesn't have a negative return, right? But when we look at our diversified portfolio, we have negative return in it. So what is the point?
Yeah, I think we have to kind of recognize that we're trying to build a portfolio for all seasons. So that's true today. And you're actually getting a decent yield off your liquidity portfolio today. But if we wind the clock back about 5 years, the liquidity portfolio was generating a tiny little bit. Yields were low. And so while it would have fulfilled some of these roles, it wouldn't have been necessarily the perfect portfolio for any future market environment. So I think what we're trying to do here is say liquidity's got a very clear purpose in terms of getting our beneficiaries paid and having that be protected. That's the moat, that's the fortress.
The growth portfolio, it's going to take the risks, it's going to have the long-term capital gains, but it's going to be the volatile portion here. Within this allocation, it's meant to be the most resilient. And what I'm hopefully conveying is we've under-delivered on the resiliency of this portfolio. We think this is the game plan to build up that resiliency. So you are absolutely correct that the liquidity portfolio today is liquid and is generating those yields. It's just not always that way. And that fixed income bias in this portfolio and in the liquidity portfolio, they can work a lot of the times, but they don't work all of the time. And we're trying to get this bucket here to be a little bit more all weather. And so it's not a dumb question by any stretch of the imagination. It is the simple implementation. And I think historically we tried to do the simple implementation both on liquidity and on risk diversifying. It worked on liquidity. It didn't work as well on risk diversifying. We're trying to enhance that resiliency from this point forward on the risk diversifying portfolio. But that is an excellent question.
Yeah, going forward with rates, I mean, we're expecting another rate cut this month, right? So with rates 50-50. Going down, 50-50?
Yeah.
If that was 80, okay.
If
they go down. And that, you know, hits our liquidity portfolio, and then those years when rates were close to zero, I mean, we were looking for ways to get some kind of return, right? We had to take more risk to offset what we weren't getting in the liquidity.
Yeah, and I think the takeaway from trustees I hopefully hear is we're trying to take different risks in this portfolio from the rest of the portfolio and what we've done historically. We're trying to build in additional risk factors, additional strategies that really, you know, they're intended to be, just as Kat said, you know, zero correlation, relatively close to zero or negative beta. You know, this is going to be the different bucket, the different strategy bucket, not long-term growth, not short-term liquidity. This is meant to be the different stuff.
I think Dennis had a follow-up.
Yeah, I just basically, if you take it like a really long time period, right, the way I simplify it for myself, and I might be wrong, but I think growth portfolio has a positive return. Liquidity has a zero return. I mean, just really, really simple terms, right? And diversified portfolio would have negative return because it's supposed to be negatively correlated to the growth. So if in a really long time period, growth has positive return, then diversifying would have negative return. So since we are all planning for really long time and we're hoping for positive return, then maybe I'm not understanding it, right? But for in a really long time period, diversified portfolio will have negative return. Is it something that we're okay with? I don't know.
We're specifically trying to engineer so it does not have a negative rate of return. We're trying to build that return profile up, but have it be different in behavior from growth. So while growth is going to be your dominant long-term factor, it's where you're going to get hopefully double-digit returns over a 10 to 20-year cycle. This is going to be more muted, but positive, and positive real returns, so net of inflation. I think the other thing to think about here is this is important to work in a crisis and be okay the other times. So in a crisis period, if the equity market is down 25 to 50%, we take a look at that and say, this is the time for robust rebalancing. If something needs to have held up in value and be liquid at that point in time. So this is something where we always engineer for the liquidity. We don't always need it. Hopefully we don't need it most of the time, but it has to be there. It's the insurance policy that you're buying. You don't need it all the time, obviously. But when the house burns, you need it to work, and you need it to work then. That's the main goal here. So hopefully that's clear. It should not have a negative rate of return. It should have a negative correlation, ideally. That doesn't mean a negative rate of return. It just means it doesn't move with the equity markets. And, you know, I think, you know, you take a look at the legend at the bottom of Kat's slide here. You know, the yellow stuff is under 4%, and we're primarily focused on the two greens, so we're getting in that 4 to 8% long-term expected return. And then the phase three would be above 8%. So hopefully those will be moving in the positive direction there.
Yeah, plan for everything to go up, but diversify and not going up as much, I guess, right? And not go down as much.
Yeah, I mean, we could take a look at this and say, you know, over the past 100 years, the U.S. equity market has been the place to be. Why don't we have all our money in that basket and just weather all the volatility? I think this board has gone through some of that volatility and says, we care to avoid a portion of that volatility. How can we do that within, you know, kind of a risk budget that makes sense? The other thing to keep in mind is we're very well funded and we're trying not to lose money. and so you're not all in on the dominant risk factor there. You're diversified both within the broader growth bucket, which is our, you know, it's our major risk factor. It's our major growth engine as well. And now we're trying to build more diversification into our insurance baskets there. So when we do have an inevitable pullback in the equity markets, because we know, you know, 25% down in equity markets happen relatively frequently, something's got to be liquid at that point in time, and something has had to have held up in value. Historically, that's been bonds, but what we recognize is that's not always bonds, and so we need some more strategies in here.
Yeah, and just another point as well. If we look at, for example, U.S. equity markets, so if we take S&P, for example, annualized three-year return was 25%, which we all experienced, superb returns. But then if we pull that back, 15-year annualized return is 15%, still good. And then if we look at 25-year return annualized return, we're now 8%. And so it's also banking on the fact that equity markets will always have that cyclicality to them, and this risk diversifying portfolio is meant to be that ballast while the equity markets are doing what they're doing, if you will.
To prevent defense. All right, anybody else? John and then Jerry.
Tim, how did we come up? Basically, it's a request for a refresher on approximately 10% for risk the risk side. 75, 10, and the balance to liquidity?
Yeah, so that came out of the asset liability study that Verisk conducted in 2024. So the board, about 15 months ago, took a look at that, and the allocation that was recommended was 6.5% to hedge funds and 3.5% to Treasury and Treasury-like securities. That collectively made up that 10% of risk diversifying. So we're, you know, the point here is not to revisit size of risk diversifying. That is a bigger asset allocation question. This is within that bucket. Let's try to optimize it here. But there'll be a conversation to be had, you know, a couple years in the future on asset allocation as well.
I guess part of the reason for the question is 10%, give or take, enough to protect us? Nobody would want to be protected.
That's a really good question. You'd have to take a look at some downside scenarios there. I think when we took a look at this the last time, if we could reallocate 10% into a 25% equity market drawdown, it was kind of a sweet spot. Anywhere between 8 and 15% was kind of the sweet spot there. Smaller than 8%, it didn't really move the needle enough. And bigger than 15% was too much of a drag. I remember that being the range, but I can get you more specific information.
No, basically, it's for my and perhaps some of the board's education or recollection. Just a word.
Yeah, and certainly, I think these are good conversations to be having as we ramp up with Makita. In the coming year, and hopefully David's still sitting behind me and listening right now. but they're going to be doing this risk survey with all of you. They're going to come back with the results of that. There's going to be some conversation around capital market assumptions from the Makita perspective and any recommendations they want to make around tweaks. So you'll start to have that conversation in the first quarter of next year, but it's going to lead you down these same paths to say, okay, what do we want to reconsider? And, you know, do we want to trigger a bigger study sooner rather than later? But you'll start to have those conversations in January and February of next year.
Yeah, just for us to keep in mind, the risk diversifying portfolio that we have has to be seen in the context that we have the liquidity bucket that is expansive. That, you know, we started at 4. I think we moved to 3. We've had discussions about whether to lower that to 2. But the point is that the GFC didn't last 24 months, right? In terms of the scorched earth drop down from that. So we're built liquidity wise to get through the GFC or worse, right, in terms of the ability to pay benefits and then to recover. So we need to think about the risk diversification piece in the context that we have a wonderful system set up to protect us from the dark days, right? That's, we just need to take that into account. It's a holistic structure.
Yes.
Can't look at just the parts, right? It's, anyway. Did you have a question, Jerry?
Just more of an observation. One of the appendices, number page 21, kind of gets to Kat's point that it's interesting. If you look at that in terms of asset class performance, with one or two exception years, you'd be pretty well served if you just had a large, gigantic ETF in the S&P 500.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is also, this ends in 2010 as well. And so if you pull that back further, this may not look the same as it does. But I think part of, to your point as well, there's the boxes are not consistently the same across the rows, right? The colors are very varied across.
But again, there are exceptions. The S&P 500 is always in the highest.
Has done well, particularly in the last 15 years. That's correct, yeah.
And I would echo that it is consistently exceeded capital market assumptions put out by every investment bank and every consultant.
It's not doing well.
But if we go back to 2010, we were talking about a last decade where U.S. equities had returned 0% over 10 years. So, you know, it can be on either side of that equation there.
All right, we good? All right, well, thank you both. Kat, welcome. Glad to have you presenting, and look forward to Summit, getting back, oxygen, all that good stuff.
Nobody climbs Everest in the winter.
That's what you do. There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
All right. When I had classes in college and I had an instructor like Kat, after the first session, I considered a major change.
Yeah, exactly. And you go back to your dorm room and look at the catalog.
I was not destined to work in that area.
That was a great presentation. I thought that was an awesome presentation.
Yeah, really, really interesting. Two thumbs up. Provoking.